This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org if you're not there already. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me again Jim Hightower, the great Texas populist and humorist and activist and writer and speaker and publisher, among other things. His Hightower Lowdown, I just found out to my dismay, has 135,000 subscribers and is the fastest growing political publication in America. And I say to my dismay because, as the late, great Gore Vidal once put it, whenever a friend of mine succeeds, I die a little bit. Hightower is also the author of several books, including most recently Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go With the Flow, Without the Flow?
With the Flow.
Even a Dead Fish Can Go With the Flow. He also writes the end column for the Progressive Magazine every month, which
yes,
I'm
indeed
eternally grateful for. Jim Hightower, welcome back to Progressive
Great
Radio.
To be with you. And by the way, I get a lot of tremendous feedback around the country as I run around speechifying about my column being in the Progressive. A lot of people are reading it there.
Well, that's a great spot for you. And it was a spot that used to be held by Molly Ivins.
Indeed.
A tremendous mutual Great. Friend of ours, one of a kind herself.
And oh, totally. And what fun she would be having in this,
yes,
this year of Todd Akin and Paul Ryan.
Oh, she can't make the stuff up, as she used to say, and it's just so true. How do you see this presidential race going?
Just going, you know, not fast enough. I want it to be over. Of course, the big story is the one that is getting the least attention, and that is the money that is behind this. This is the first presidential election with the full Monty of Citizen United exposing itself in a buck naked and butt ugly fashion to the American people.
No joke.
Extraordinary sums of money. Sheldon Adelson, I was just seeing, the casino baron out of Las Vegas, who invested $21 million in Newt Gingrich's campaign. I mean, there was a lost cause from the start, but I guess he's a gambler, and now he's put a total of $35 million into the GOP primaries, including $10 million now to Mitt Romney. But he's also put another $36 million into three of the super PACs and secret funds that are run by Karl Rove, the Koch brothers, and Eric Cantor, the majority leader of the Republican majority leader of the House. So, and he says that he'll spend maybe more than $100 million to defeat Barack Obama. I mean, one guy just unleashed. You know, it seems to me, Matt, that if you put $100 million into a presidential campaign, you ought to get naming rights, don't you think? I mean, the Sheldon Adelson Mitt Romney flim-flam campaign.
You may put a casino on the west wing of the White House.
Yeah, there you go.
Gets Romney in there. Who knows?
Get some slots going.
It is bizarre, though, and it brings to into real focus the folly, the ludicrousness of Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision that you mentioned from 2010, where the majority decision said that having individuals give unlimited amounts of money to campaigns not only doesn't corrupt the system, it doesn't even give the appearance of corruption of the system.
Anthony Kennedy's opinion said that. It was just an astonishing, you know. I know the learned judge and all of the learned judges are supposed to be highly educated, but I hear something like that, and I think 100,000 sperm, and you were the fastest. That just couldn't possibly have any touch with the reality. I mean, he must be so removed in that judicial bubble there that he just has no connection.
Maybe the last sock out of the dryer, as I like to say.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I saw a site the other day, actually, is Stiglitz, the great progressive economist, was talking about inequality, and he was talking about the power of money to drive that inequality, and he referred back to our old friend Charles Keating, the SNL scoundrel, who put about $1.5 million into the pockets of key members of the Congress to get his way with a regulation and legislation that let him run some SNLs into the ground. And Keating was asked subsequently in a Senate hearing, well, did that money buy you any influence? And he said, I hope it did.
He's no fool.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not fools. Those who say, and you see it all the time, you know, some member of Congress is caught taking money from the special interests of before the committee of which they chair, and they'll say, well, of course, it has no impact on my legislative decisions. Well, of course it has an impact. That's why they spend the money.
So how do we get out of this Citizens United cul-de-sac that we're in? And it actually was there before that decision, too, with
yes.
prior Supreme Court decisions that said money equals speech, corporations equal persons. One of the exciting things going on around the country is this move to amend the U.S. Constitution.
Absolutely.
And do you put hope there?
I do. And it is, you know, it doesn't get hardly any media coverage, but it is going stronger than hog's breath right now. There's seven states have passed resolutions calling on the Congress to send to them, the people in their states, an amendment that they can vote on of whether a corporation is a person and whether corporate money is in fact speech, in one form or another, to get the corporate money out of our politics. 68 cities have already passed similar resolutions, including right here in sunny Madison, Wisconsin, by an initiative here. 84% of the people here approved that back just over a year ago. But all over the country, in places you wouldn't necessarily expect, are standing up because this cuts across all the lines. Something like 87% of the people favor a constitutional amendment to get this money out of our politics.
Yeah, I saw a statistic that said 75% of Republicans don't
like
the Citizens United decision.
Exactly. You know, this is not one that we have to create the movement, go out and educate everybody. People are sitting out there saying, you know, why can't we vote on this? Why can't we do something about this? Well, the reason is because of the money. The money that we're trying to get rid of is the money that is controlling the decision, too many of the big decisions of both political parties, including my Democrats.
But then it's a bit of a chicken and egg, Jim Hightower, because for us to get that constitutional amendment passed, politicians ultimately are going to have to vote on it, and they got their seats on dirty money.
Yeah, but this has worked in the past. We've had the nuclear fight back in the 1970s when, again, the Congress, neither party, would do anything about this was after this Six-Mile Island, Five-Mile Island, Six-Mile
Island. Three-Mile Island.
Three-Mile Island. I knew it was a number. Three-Mile Island in Pennsylvania. But also the anti-nuke nuclear weapon.
So the nuclear freeze campaign.
Yeah, nuclear freeze campaign. Wasn't getting anywhere in Washington, so they went to the people and they did exactly now what the a group called the coalition is called United for the People. And that includes Move to Amend, Free Speech for People, SEIU, CWA,
Public Citizen,
just on and on. Some 100 great public interest groups are involved in this thing. To go out and organize people around this issue and demand constantly send these resolutions from cities and from states and counties to their own legislators saying, hey, this is something we care about and you need to be paying attention to it. And, you know, that builds up over a period of time to where they can't avoid it. And particularly if we begin to surround them when they come home. You know, it doesn't work just to go to Washington and try to lobby in their office because, you know, they've got their drawbridges set up there.
And their moats and everything.
Yeah, right. But when they come home, you know, they're in the phone book. but, you know, I would start with their offices, but they also have residences. then it's fair to go, you know, in the streets in front of their residences and say, hey, you know, here we are. Where are you?
I do think this is one of the great grassroots movements that's going on in this country that excites me. And you travel the country constantly, and you're not one of those progressive pessimists.
I mean, you
see other good actions going on. What else is inspiring you now that you're seeing?
Oh, it's just kind of across the board. There's all sorts of fair wage issues, minimum wage. You know, my last issue of the Hightower Lowdown I did on the disgrace of the minimum wage is still sitting there at 7 and a quarter. An hour.
Compared to, I mean, it's like 1968 levels or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it doesn't even get to that. It's way below that. It's a poverty wage. You know, what kind of ethic is in a work ethic that says you work full time and you make a poverty wage. It's $4,000 below poverty for a single mom. And it's largely women are the ones who are getting minimum wage or just a little bit above. So there's a movement and legislation in the Congress to raise it to $10 an hour. And that would take it to the 1968 level, the buying power of the minimum wage.
I know Ralph Nader's been moving hard on this,
too. Ralph has been right in front of it, and it has some legislative support, but there's no energy behind it because Obama, who said in 2008 when he was running, by 2011, I will have raised the minimum wage essentially to $10 an hour, and he hasn't said anything about it since.
What do you make of our president?
Well, he's disappointing, of course, and sometimes disgraceful as a Democrat. You know, as I say, weaker than Canadian hot sauce when it comes to standing up for the people that that he's supposed to be representing. The little D and big D Democrat actually ought to be standing for, and he's done some good things, but he's been disappointing on too many big things and. Pusillanimous, my own new favorite word, which is clean, believe it or not, look it up, and too meek, you know, in his initial proposals, healthcare being one obvious example of, instead of saying Medicare for all, it was something with public option with something else with 47,000 pages, and, you know, nobody could figure out quite what it was.
And he threw that overboard then.
Yeah, tossed that one. So I'm disappointed. But having said that, my message, and I've come in here to Wisconsin on this trip to be a part of the Fighting Bob Fest, which is one of the great. Well, as I say, it's the best political party in America. not intending to be a political party, but it has put the party back in politics, and that's worthwhile. But my message there to people who do not necessarily. Want to hear anything good about Obama is that it is essential for the progressive movement to reelect Obama, not for him, but for our movement. Because if we do not, then we're going to be hurled back into this grossly defensive posture of fighting every horrible thing that's going to come out of the Romney-Ryan administration and the Koch-funded Congress. So
people who are flirting with the Green Party, you're telling them to stop flirting?
Well, you know, I can't say that about something that's actually building a party. I think that's legitimate. But just saying, I'm just disappointed in Obama and I'm just not going to vote, well, BS. Bovine excrement, as we say out in Lubbock. That's not going to get it done. One, we have Tammy Baldwin, we have Elizabeth Warren, we have good people running all over the country that are worth turning out for, local people as well. We have initiatives on the ballot that need to be supported, initiatives that need to be defeated. So there's a real reason to do your citizen responsibility and be a part of the decision making. But also, if it's just about, I just don't want to vote for Obama, well, there is a reason to vote for him, and that is us. That is you, if you're a progressive, because the great grassroots efforts that we have going, including the campaigns to repeal Citizen United, are going to be swamped by us having to put our energy, our resources, our creativity into these negative fights.
Will, why don't you make an assessment of Romney or Romney-Ryan for me? Because, you know, some elections, they don't seem real clear, the distinctions. You know, Bob Dole, Bill Clinton wasn't a huge thing there. They both would have passed NAFTA. They both would have taken down Glass-Steagall and did.
Yeah.
Clinton did. But what kind of a cat is Romney?
Well, he is what he is. He is, a son of privilege. Who narcissistically seems to think that he's one of the common people, has a home. In fact, he has three homes and a home with a garage for his cars, an elevator for his cars, by the way.
I'd never heard of such a thing.
Yes, no, I didn't know they existed, but there it is out in California, his California home. But more importantly, who thinks of himself as a, you know, having been a, you know, what I would call a financial vulture, but let's say, all right, he's a private equity manager, which it means he takes over corporations and then more often than not strips them of their assets, fires thousands of employees, and makes a killing off of the remnants of it, sells it off or puts it into bankruptcy and moves on to the next one. Yet with this experience, he says that now I'm I have the know-how to be able to fix our economy. But he's using fix in the same way that a veterinarian uses. And if anyone's confused, you should just ask your dog.
So we've got Romney here, who seems to, you know, represent this one wing of the capitalist system, the far right of the Republican Party on the commercial side. And then you got Ryan, who's got the social conservatism.
Oh, yeah. And well, he's got it all, Ryan, you know, and I dare say, you know, that that really it's not the Romney-Ryan ticket in a lot of ways. It's the Ryan-Romney ticket, certainly on the budget that Ryan passed and Romney had to make a big stand. It's must have been terribly awkward for the presidential candidate to have to stand up and literally say, "I'm the one running for president, you know, not this other guy, and I'm certainly going to consider his advice, but I am the one running for president." But on the social stuff, you know, just across the board, abortion and you know,
I mean, Ryan, no abortion and even for rape or incest.
Yeah, right. It's just you know, that Todd Akin has been taken to the woodshed by the Republican leadership because they've been embarrassed by him. But Ryan has exactly the same position, essentially. So why shouldn't he have to resign as well? But that's the nutty factor that has come into their. They've moved from right wing to just right out of their minds, way beyond the fringe of what the American mainstream is, and I include a whole bunch of Republicans and certainly genuine conservatives in that. This is not what they meant, this kind of nutty stuff, but it's not the nuttiest of all. I mean, they just when you think it cannot get any deeper, it does. There's a guy out in Lubbock, Texas, who county judge out there, and he suddenly upped and startled the Lubbockians in that town by declaring that he needed a tax increase, a local tax increase, because he needed more police. Well, why do you need more police? Well, because there's a crisis looming on the horizon, and what is that? Well, that is that if Obama is reelected, God forbid, he said, but if he is reelected, that he is going to turn over the sovereignty of the United States to the United Nations. And, of course, this is going to cause people to rise up in opposition into what this Judge Tom Head says will be a civil war. And then what's going to happen? He said Obama is going to unleash United Nations troops on the United States. Well, number one, the United Nations has no troops. They have to get their troops from other countries. But secondly, he has declared that this tax increase is necessary so he can have the police to stand up in Lubbock, because he's going to stand in front, he said, of their personnel carrier and say, "No, you will not enter here." So Lubbock is taking the stand unless, right down the road, Sweetwater stands up first. I don't know how it's going to go. But this is the level of nuttiness. This guy is the leading county official of the Republican Party in that part of the world. And
well, doesn't that distress you, Jim Hightower? I mean, here we have not only the farthest to the right Republican ticket in memory, and Ryan certainly would be way out on the outer edge of that, but you have this base of irrationalism and craziness. You know, a majority of Republicans think that Obama is a Muslim, and he isn't. It wouldn't be a problem if he were, but they're just totally wrong about it. They went crazy about his birth certificate, which is a non-issue. I mean, there is a level of just, you know, it's the dusk of the age of reason right now. I mean, we're really getting beyond.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the evidence is, you know, Todd Akin is a member of the Science Committee. Michelle Bachmann is a member of the Intelligence Committee. I mean, you know, you can't make this stuff up. You can't even dream this stuff up. So, but I think that doesn't scare me because they're doing themselves in. what worries me, we can't do anything about that, we on the progressive side, but we can do something about the Democrats or the progressive politics generally, even those who want to be green or other alternatives out there, the Working Families Party for sure in New York and Oregon and Connecticut where they're working.
Well, what do we do, Jim Hightower? And you're listening to Progressive Radio, and I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine, and I should have answers for this too, but I'd rather ask Jim for his. But how do we either recapture the Democratic Party and make it a really progressive party, or form another one?
Well, we have been steadily recapturing the party. There's a very aggressive and progressive caucus in the House of Representatives now, with about 90 members. All right, let's say that 60 of those are pretty solidly progressive, you know, consistently so. But it has tremendous leadership. Keith Ellison over here in Minneapolis, the first Muslim member of the Congress. Raul Grijalva out of Tucson, Arizona, just a dynamite guy. Both of them are very, very smart, very committed to what is called an inside-outside strategy, which we haven't had since the days of the Vietnam War, when the members of the Congress inside count on the outsiders to provide the political oomph to move the Congress itself forward, knowing that it can't be an inside job. They don't have, inside is where the money matters. Outside is where people matter. So that strategy, focused on educational issues that they're taking on, Citizen United issues, jobs issues, so many more, with very, very good, well thought out program involving those grassroots public interest organizations that have so much brilliance within them and policy thought that is all workable. Thing not only Citizen United, but things like the Wall Street tax. You know, they say, well, we don't have any money. Well, of course we got money. The hedge fund operators have plenty of money.
This is one of the big issues, Jim Hightower, that you talk about and write about is the power of Wall Street over not only our economy but over our entire political system. Yeah. And it is just extraordinary. I remember talking to Dennis Kucinich once, and he says, you know, the Pentagon and the Wall Street, they run the whole government. And then you had the Democratic senator from Illinois, Dick Durbin, says, you know, the bankers own this place.
Yeah. Well, they do, because they can own a presidency if the president fights inside and not outside. They can own it because they can screw up the economy for a president if they want to.
But here, Obama had them dead to rights.
Absolutely.
And they came, he called them to the White House, and rather than say, you know, if you want the $700 billion and all these trillions of guarantees, you know, you got to reduce everybody's principal or not foreclose on anybody. Yeah. What did the president
say? You got to give up your job, and by the way, we're going to decentralize
some of
this.
Yeah, we're going to get rid of you like we did to the head of GM.
But, we're going to decentralize our finances out to our community banks. And
he didn't do any of that. He said, I'm on your side, and you guys have a PR problem.
Well, because he still had them inside, right? He had Timmy Geithner and Larry Summers
as
his chief political people, his chief financial people, who are Wall Street folks. So when you stack the odds against yourself like that.
He does bargain against himself.
That's
sometimes.
What's going to happen, you know. So, again, that's why you have to have an outside strategy. You got to have a Roosevelt who is willing to say, I welcome their hatred. You know, I don't mind that they despise me, and I'm going to the people and say, you know, we've got to do something about this, and here's the big changes we're going to make. And, in fact, what Roosevelt really did was to save capitalism. He saved their bacon.
Sure did. And, you know, in Obama's acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention, he mentioned FDR, and I thought he had taken those three letters out of his alphabet because I'd never heard him mention FDR before.
Yeah, that was encouraging.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Listen, another exciting thing that's happening in this country that is a cause for optimism is this movement toward slow food, toward organics.
Yeah.
And, wow, you were way ahead of this movement. I was just looking it up. You wrote a book called Hard Tomatoes, Hard Times 40 years ago.
Yeah, right.
And then, you know, every few years someone comes out with a new book about how tomatoes are plastic
at
the organic farmer's market. I said, God, Hightower better get royalties
on
that.
Yeah, right. Yes, we did. Susan DeMarco and myself and the group that was banded together on something called the Agribusiness Accountability Project, a sort of wonky mouthful, but we did take it on back then. And, you know, I just spoke down in Chicago just about 3 months ago to the Rural Sociology Association of America, and these are sociologists from the land-grant colleges, which is what that book took on. And it was so rewarding for me because these are now full professors and et cetera, but they were graduate students and associate professors and low-level people in the land-grant system back then. But they used that book. They were glad to have that book because it gave them ammunition to fight for what they believed, which was a form of social justice.
One of my neighbors is one of those rural sociologists, and he's got the best homegrown cherry tomatoes on the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
I sneak by and grab a handful. Yeah. I'm not ashamed to say.
Well, you know, there's a great story out of that writing of the book, because Susan DeMarco did the research, and she went to the head of the research at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who was very proud of these hard tomatoes that had been developed by the land-grant college system so they could be mechanically harvested. And he said, oh, these look at these. These will sit in a grocery bin for 3 months. You know, this will make. And Susan, in her modest way, she's from New Jersey, she said, yeah, but, you know, I grew up in New Jersey, and those tomatoes in New Jersey, said, they were really these don't quite have the same taste. And he leaned over to her and said, your children will never know the difference.
That's brutal.
And, of course, those are the children who have created the good food movement, the slow food movement, and the big change that has taken place, a true populist grassroots movement.
And then, of course, corporate America tries to co-opt it. You got Walmart going into organics. So.
Well, they're going even further because there's a new effort down at the University of Florida to create to isolate the. They actually have a artificial nose that sniffs tomatoes to try to find its chemical, but to try to find the compounds that make good tomato flavor, so that they can extract those and artificialize those and put those back into an industrial tomato. It's going to be about a $40 tomato by the time
God forbid people grow their own tomatoes. Like
yeah,
these.
Yeah, just don't go in your backyard. Might be soil out there.
Well, what's next for you, Jim Hightower?
More of the same, and more of it. You know, I'm encouraging everybody to keep on keeping on, but to intensify, because this is a big time. There really is a chance, I think, to get this money out of politics. Occupy has done a terrific job of raising that level of corporate power to a common political level in our country, and people want to do something about it.
I mean, to me, that just showed when Occupy took off, and, you know, maybe it's flagged a little bit toward the end of its first year, but wow, the latent demand among the people in this country to take on the plutocracy.
It's completely driving the presidential election, right? I mean, taking on Mitt Romney and his failure to, you know, his Swiss bank account, his Cayman Island tax dodging, and the scams that they run on us.
Yeah, I mean, for once, these issues that you've been fighting for, and we have magazine here for a while about whether we're going to have democracy or plutocracy this country, whether we're going to have a tiny group running the economy and the political system, or whether we're going to have real democracy.
Well, the fact that word plutocracy is now back in popular use is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that's an accomplishment in itself, and it's gratifying for me, as I know it is for you, to see it come back, and you've been one of the chief warriors against plutocracy. So I wish you well in the time ahead. And thanks again, Jim Hightower, for being my guest on Progressive
Radio.
Thank
you, Matt.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.